Today's readings are taken from Psalm 112 and Matthew chapter 5 verses 1 to 16. Psalm 112. Praise the Lord. Blessed are those who fear the Lord, who find great delight in His command. Their children will be mighty in the land. The generations of the upright will be blessed. Wealth and riches are in their houses, and their righteousness endures forever. Even in darkness, light dawns for the upright, for those who are gracious and compassionate and righteous. Good will come to those who are generous and lend freely, who conduct their affairs with justice. Surely the righteous will never be shaken. They will be remembered forever. They will have no fear of bad news. Their hearts are steadfast, trusting in the Lord. Their hearts are secure. They will have no fear. In the end, they will look in triumph on their foes. They have freely scattered their gifts to the poor. Their righteousness endures forever. Their horn will be lifted high in honor. The wicked will see and be vexed. They will gnash their teeth and waste away. The longings of the wicked will come to nothing. The second reading is from Matthew chapter 5, verses 1 to 16. Now, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them. He said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kind of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything, except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven."
Thank you for that. Good morning again. As you may tell from my shirt, if you can see that far, when I was in Sydney recently, I had the opportunity to see the musical Hamilton. Who's seen it or knows the story pretty well? Not many. Okay, that's fine. For those who haven't, it's a musical written by the amazingly talented Lin-Manuel Miranda about the life of Alexander Hamilton, one of America's founding fathers. Now, in many ways, Hamilton was responsible for bringing the various colonies and settlements in America during the 18th century together to form the United States of America. And yet, the musical that bears his name is almost as much about his wife, Eliza, as it is about Alexander. Now, if you haven't seen it, sounds like many of you haven't, I hope I'm not giving too much away to say that Alexander dies near the end of the musical. And the final song of the musical is Eliza's story. And from Alexander's death, for the next 50 years, Eliza devoted her life to preserving Alexander's legacy. She campaigned against slavery. She founded schools. She spent her time raising funds for public works. She established a private orphanage. And in the spare time she had, she sifted through the literal mountain of writings and papers that Alexander had written over his lifetime and wrote his biography. And yet, after working tirelessly for 50 years, she asks herself, when my time is up, have I done enough? Will they tell my story? Now, the musical Hamilton has told her story. But without the musical, I probably wouldn't have known who Alexander Hamilton was. I'm sure if I went to school in America and sat through their history lessons or looked at their $10 bill, which I understand he's on, I would have known who he is. But I didn't really know who he was. But whether we knew who he was or not, he made a difference in our world. There are some people who really do change the world, who make a really tangible impact on those around them that lasts after they're dead and gone. But for the most part, these people are few and far between. How about the rest of us? In his work, Meditations, the Roman emperor and Stoic philosopher Marcus Aurelius wrote, "What we do now echoes in eternity." Does that fit with how you think of your life? The fact is that most of us are just too busy trying to get through the day, dealing with the rat race of getting the kids to school, going to the office, paying the bills, picking up the kids, taking them to sport. It's amazing how busy we are in our lives. We're just trying to get by and have no time to think of anything so grandiose as changing the world. Most of us have a hard enough time changing our Spotify playlist. And yet, when asked what it is that gives life meaning and purpose, one of the themes that kept recurring was that we long to have an impact on the world we live in, an impact on those around us. So how does that fit? Is it right to want that? And if so, how can we do it? Well, over the next 20 minutes or so, I'll be looking at these questions and seeing if the Bible has any wisdom can bring to bear for us. When the internet began to take off in the early 1990s, the world changed. Originally, the main use of the internet was transfer of data and email and so on. But particularly with the introduction of Facebook and YouTube in the mid-2000s, the ability for the average person on the street to broadcast their own posts and videos to a large audience just took off. Today, we have a whole industry of social media influencers who regularly push their opinions out to their followers. And we're not talking about small audiences either. Portuguese soccer player Cristiano Ronaldo tops the list at over 700 million followers. For perspective, that's 14% of every man, woman, and child in the world who has internet access. Other high-ranking influencers include Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber, Beyonce, and the intriguingly named Mr. Beast, supposedly one of the nicest guys on the internet. He comes in at a paltry 470 million followers. Now, it's fair to say that these social influencers have an effect on the world we live in. But it's not just these big names who are trying to spread influence in this way. Every day, people around the world are uploading 720,000 hours of video to YouTube. There's 95 million photos and videos posted on Instagram, 735 million comments on Facebook, and 34 million videos uploaded to TikTok, and 504 million tweets every single day. Why? Because something in each and every one of us wants to be heard. We want to make an impact. We want to make an impact on others. We want to change the world we live in. And the internet has provided a platform through which the tech savvy can send their message. But of course, there are other ways to seek to make a difference. My dad died a couple of months ago. And since then, I've spent some time thinking about the effect he had on the world and on the legacy he left. I spoke earlier about insisting that his children go to church, and we'll talk a bit more about that in a little bit. Now, when he finished school, he apprenticed as a carpenter. But when his apprenticeship finished, the only job on offer was a painter, and so he worked as a painter. And for the next 50 years, he worked as a house painter. Never really enjoyed it. But he was of that generation that just didn't change jobs. I have a job, why would I change? And he was good at it. He never advertised. All of his jobs came through word of mouth recommendations. And over those 5 decades, he must have painted well over 1,000 houses. And through the work he did, he made the world a brighter and more beautiful place for his clients. He ended his life with 6 children and children-in-law, 13 grandchildren, and 3 great-grandchildren. And he was a good dad. He spent time with us sharing about faith and life, teaching us skills and disciplining us when necessary. I remember, you know, on more than one occasion when I did something particularly wrong, which wasn't, you know, unlikely, Dad would make an appointment with me out at the woodshed. Not go straight there, you know, straight there immediately, but an appointment to give me time to stew about things. At the appointed time, we'd march me out to the woodshed and select a nice offensive weapon. You know, that'll hurt. That's good. And then before doing anything else, he'd have a serious talk. Do you know what you did wrong? Yes, I know what I did wrong. Will you do it again? No, I'll never do it again. Good. Now go back inside and don't tell your mother. But he had an influence on us kids that has lived on because of the way he loved us. And yes, sometimes that love involved discipline, as every parent knows that it has to. His influence wasn't as wide as a social media influencer, but it was real influence. So through his work and through his children, he left his mark on those around him and on the world he lived in. The problem, of course, is that no matter how well-intentioned we are, no matter how much impact we think we might have, our influence is limited. It rarely extends as far or as deeply as we would like, and rarely lasts as long as we would like. For example, social media influencers can only have influence when they say the things their followers can support. You might remember the backlash against J.K. Rowling, the author of the Harry Potter books, for her comments on gender issues back in 2020. Her comments led to her being cancelled. It's a term that's only arisen in the past few years and which, as far as I can tell, has a lot less impact, than those cancelling would like it to have. But in reality, a social media influencer almost has to act like the 19th century French politician Alexandre Ledru-Rollin, who is reported to have said, "There go my people. I must find out where they are going so I can lead them." The risk of getting cancelled means that there's only so much influence an influencer can have. And that very drive to have influence can become so all-embracing that it takes over a person's identity. I need to be heard. I need to make a difference. Otherwise, I'm a nobody. Just last month, Kubra Aykut, a 26-year-old Turkish woman who rose to fame in 2023 when she married herself, committed suicide. The note she left expressed her struggles with loneliness, saying that she'd been struggling with her life for years, but no one had noticed. And yet she had over 1 million followers on TikTok. The people following her weren't really interested in her at all. We all need to be heard. That's part of who we are as social creatures. While social media can give the illusion that we're connected to people, it's exactly that. It's an illusion. The impact social media gives us is, in reality, a mirage. The idea that we can impact the world and have an impact on those around us through our Instagram photos or our TikTok videos is flawed. talked earlier about my dad having spent his time, spent his working life painting houses. The reality is, of course, many of those houses he painted no longer exist. They've been demolished to make room for newer, more modern homes. Almost all the other houses he painted would have been repainted since by someone else, maybe more than once. And the rest, been retired for a few years now, so the rest of the houses either need to be repainted badly or need to be demolished. The impact he left on the world through his work is gone. How about the impact he had on family? Well, it's true that his commitment to God and to church and to family has had an impact, and that all three of his children still regularly attend church and live as Christians. And while that influence has continued down to most of his grandchildren, not all. And there are some who have walked away from the faith. It's true, isn't it, that despite our best intentions and best efforts, some children from Christian homes walk away from God. A recent study suggests that around 35% of children who grew up in church are no longer professing Christians. And that number's remained steady for about 10 years or so. At best, the influence we have on our children might end up with us handing down our views, our thoughts, our way of doing things, which in the end may be less relevant to the next generation than we think. And of course, there are also many couples who never have children, or people who, or others who, for a variety of reasons, don't get married, don't have the opportunity. And so the idea that we can make an impact on the world through our work or through our children is flawed. But perhaps our view of influence, of making an impact, is upside down. What if the most effective, long-lasting impact we can have on this world isn't about our views, our thoughts, or our actions, but about something else, something bigger than us? In Matthew 5, which we heard earlier, Jesus flips our world upside down. What does he say? Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And so it continues. Jesus is saying it's those who take the low road, who live their lives humbly, who are truly blessed. That doesn't seem to go with making an impact in the world, does it? But Jesus goes on to say, you are the light of the world. Sorry, you are the salt of the earth. I'll go to verse 13 first. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? And then he says, you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. I'm sure you've noticed the number of food products in our supermarkets that claim to be salt reduced. I even saw Woolies have started selling salt reduced salt, if you can believe that. Too much salt isn't good for you, we know that. But my wife made some pumpkin soup the other day. Now, I love pumpkin soup, especially with some crusty bread. But as she finished serving it out, she said, just letting you know, I didn't put any salt or pepper with it. That was important information. Pumpkin soup with no salt is just bland, unappealing orange stuff. But add some salt. Divine. Salt just makes a lot of things taste better. Maybe not ice cream, although they do have salted caramel. So, the world makes sense yet again. Is that what Jesus meant about being salt of the earth, that we make life taste better? Maybe. Salt was also used as a preservative for keeping meat fresh before the age of refrigeration. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's a mixture of both. How about being the light of the world? At Modbury last week, we went on a church camp. And I've got to say, on a cloudy night up at Parawira, away from the city lights, it's pretty dark at night. A couple of years, Sally and I were taking a walk at night, and as we crossed a road near our house, we saw a massive spider. Okay, it wasn't that big. It was probably that big. It was huge. And look, I'm wary of spiders at the best of times. So we took a wide berth and, walked right around. The next night, we went for a walk again. And there was this spider again in the same spot. And it was just starting to freak me out now. Couple of days later, we went for a walk past the same spot in the day, during the day. Turns out it was a toy plastic tarantula with half its legs missing that had fallen off someone's car or been thrown out a window or something. Where darkness had brought fear, light had revealed the truth. Salt and light, these things make an impact. Jesus uses these ideas of salt and light as ways that we can make an impact on the world and on the people around us. He says, in the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. That's how we make an impact, by shining the light of Jesus into the world, by sharing the good news of God's kingdom. We can make an impact on this world that will last not only after we're dead and gone, but that will last into eternity. Now, if you're here today because someone invited you to come along, or you just dropped to check church out, but you're not sure about the whole Jesus thing, I encourage you to check him out. Because there's something down in each one of us that longs to make a difference in the world, to have an impact on those around us. And the only way we can do that is when we're working out of the strength of someone greater than we are. Jesus came to earth to inaugurate God's kingdom on earth. That's what's going to last into eternity. It's the only thing that will. And so if you really want to make an impact on the world, allow Jesus to make an impact on you first. For those of us who are Christians, let's take Jesus' words to heart. Let the light of the gospel shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify our Father in heaven. That's how we make an impact on the world and on those around us. But there's more to the story. According to the Bible, back in Genesis, humanity was created for a purpose. I alluded to this earlier. Genesis tells us that humankind was created so that they may rule over the fish of the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. And God's command to humanity was, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it. We were created to have an impact on the world. That's where this instinct comes from. That's where our desire to have an impact comes from. We were created for it. So that's in the first chapter of the Bible, and as we know, things went south from there pretty quickly. But let's jump to the last chapter, to the end of Revelation. Now, Revelation was written by a guy named John, and the book describes a vision he had, which, through a whole lot of symbolism, which we don't have time for today, describes the whole cosmic arc from creation to Jesus' return. In Revelation 21, John talks of seeing a new heaven and a new earth, essentially the earth and the skies renewed, the effects of Adam and Eve's fall in the Garden of Eden reversed and made whole again. And in the final chapter of Revelation, chapter 22, he speaks of those whose names are written in the book of life. That's us, if you've committed your life to Christ. And he says that in this renewed earth, they will reign forever and ever. We were designed to have an impact on the world we live in. And in the world to come, the world without end, we will live that out, reigning under God and impacting the world for all eternity. Now, I started earlier by looking at the life of Alexander Hamilton. Again, another spoiler alert, Hamilton died by being shot in a pistol duel with Aaron Burr. It's no secret, it's in the history books. In the musical, as Burr fires his gun, the scene stops. And as everything around is frozen in time, Hamilton considers the legacy he will leave. And he asks, what is a legacy? It's planting seeds in a garden you never get to see. I wrote